This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
Welcome to a special episode of Party Politics. I'm Brandon Rodinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston.
And I'm Jay Iyer, a political science professor from Texas Southern University. Thanks for joining us today, Brandon. Big issues around. We are at the precipice of one of the most interesting things in America, and that is the beginning of a session of the Texas legislature.
Yes.
Important to note, they only meet 140 days every 2 years. So it's kind of like a little special months-long Christmas. Think of it that way.
Right. For those of us who like it, for those of us who don't, they call it like a 140-day carnival because it's going to get wild. There are a lot of big issues, Jay, that are on the agenda. And honestly, it's going to be really a new sort of leadership focus, which I think is going to make some serious changes. Let's talk about leadership first. That's going to be obviously something that's going to set the tone for the session. There's a new speaker, Dennis Bonin, coming in. We've got, of course, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Greg Abbott, who are also the other two of the big three, who won their elections by less than predicted margins, especially Dan Patrick. So what do we sort of expect in terms of leadership here, and what's the tone going to be since we've had such contentious interactions the last couple of cycles?
So to me, there's three big issues on the question of leadership. Are we going to see Greg Abbott do what he has done the last previous sessions, which is be really passive, be very reactive, and essentially be this referee between the lieutenant governor and the speaker and just wait and see in which side he's going to pick on a case-by-case basis, usually siding with the lieutenant governor, really because he was fearful of his kind of right flank? Or do we see an invigorated Greg Abbott, who is now the leading vote getter in the state of Texas? He won resoundingly against his opponent, while his sort of rival, for lack of a better word, and Dan Patrick, really stumbled, incredibly underperformed statewide, had a primary challenger. They got 1 in 4 Republican primary voters voted against Dan Patrick, and on top of that, ran against a Democrat who was a talented and smart candidate, but woefully underfunded, and essentially barely beat him.
That's
a real issue. Now, and the third piece, of course, is what is Dennis Bonin really like? We know that, you know, Dennis the Menace, the new speaker, Bonin has a sort of this reputation of being kind of a bull of the House, and would sort of stand up for House members. Very procedurally oriented, cares about financial issues, energy-related issues, not been sort of this social bomb thrower. How does that work? I don't see a chastened Dan Patrick. I see a Dan Patrick that's going to continue to be who he is and be defiant. The question to me, the big question, is what Greg Abbott will we see?
Yeah, that's a great point. Greg Abbott had worked mostly behind the scenes in the last couple of legislative sessions, and moments where he kind of peeked out on certain issues like the bathroom bill. But this is his Republican Party now. And the way that Rick Perry was able to kind of transform the legislature to his will, I think that Abbott may have the capacity to do that. Whether it'll actually happen or not, I don't know, because you've got some big personalities in the rest of the big three. I think that Dan Patrick is and potentially could be one of the most powerful lieutenant governors in modern history. Bob Bullock would be the only other person, and Bob Bullock only gets that because he had, like, files of people's personal lives.
He was a J. Edgar Hoover of Texas politics. People don't realize he knew everything. He knew where all the bodies were buried, even though he himself had this very colorful life, shall we say?
Right, and so he, yes, exactly, had kind of a hit file on every single person who may be in a position to get in his way, and he had an encyclopedic memory on the budget. So Patrick, though, I think rivals that in terms of political power. But I think that he's going to really be muted because you're going to have a fairly powerful Dennis Bonin. Now, I'm reminded of the fact that, like, the first five speakers in the Texas legislature were in the same session. None of them held office for long enough to even get an official portrait. So we've come a long way from where speakers were kind of in the background. And now we're at the point where I think Bonin will hit the ground running. He is well-versed in this and is not going to back down from Dan Patrick. So I think we're going to see a lot more friction. I think Abbott's going to lead the charge. I think that if Bond is smart, he'll follow that lead. And that's going to be, I think, generally speaking, a session that's going to be about getting things done. Now, last session, it was all about sort of these big social contentious issues. This next session, I think, is going to be about the really impactful things that are coming up, and especially things like school finance. But before we talk about what they can spend money on, let's talk about what they have to spend. And that's about the budget, which is, of course, always a big fight.
Yeah. So the rules work that budget bills start off in the House and go through to the Senate. We've got a massively large budget. And as I talked about, because they only meet every other year, they produce a budget for what they call the biennium. So these are two-year budgets. We know about it. And the two big ticket items, of course, are funding on education, funding on health and human services. Only about 18% of the state's budget is what we call discretionary, mm-hmm. meaning that they have the ability to sort of allocate dollars. The amount they have to spend is not set actually by the legislature, but by a combination of a report that's produced by the state comptroller, in this case, Glenn Hager. And he's already said that, unlike last session, you know, we are flush with cash in the state of Texas right now. We have at least $2 to $4 billion in revenue, additional revenue. And that revenue is going to have to go to certain things. We're obviously looking at greater expenses on education. They've got special ed issues they're going to have to deal with. They've got Medicare, Medicaid issues they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
You still have to reform and inject more resources into things like child protective services. Lots of things going on the budget cycle.
Yeah. Well, and the Legislative Budget Board, which is run in part by Lieutenant Governor and in part by the Speaker, have to set the budget cap before the comptroller can determine how much money is available. That cap has been going down. And my thinking is that they're going to try to find a way to make that cap a little bit higher, because I think that if Dennis Bonin is true to his word that he wants to put a lot more money into public education, then they're going to need that cap room to be able to put some money into the till. As Ann Richards once says, don't pass the bill if you can't fill the till. Well, they're going to have at least something here to be able to spend money on. But like you say, there's more money than there used to be, in part because actually this is a good sort of segue, and that's the discussion about online sales tax, right, which the Supreme Court has now allowed for states to collect. So Texas may have a bit of a buffer, or something potentially close to $1 billion, which would go a long way. But they also have got big budget holes. They've got about an $8 billion budget hole, Jay, from these sorts of deferrals in the Medicaid program and in the deferral to the Roads and Highways Fund. So they have a big structural deficit here they've got to pay back. And if there's one thing that Republican primary voters don't like, that's basically deficit spending, which is in some ways sort of what's happening here.
Well, I mean, the debt load for the state of Texas has essentially ballooned over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's through the deferral payment. But you brought up something related to, and that we should talk about, the online taxing is a huge potential windfall for the state. But here's the kicker. It doesn't happen without action by the legislature. They have to actually affirmatively collect
right.
those taxes, because right now they don't. And so that would essentially mean the state of Texas doing something they haven't done in a very, very long time, and that's expand either the sales tax base
Uh-oh.
Or, in fact, increase taxes. And folks like Empower Texas and others, the Texas Public Policy Foundation, are going to be saying, you're raising my taxes.
Somewhere Michael Quinn Sullivan's ears
head
just perked up, right?
Oh, like, yeah, yeah. Or head exploded,
yeah,
depending
exactly,
on your perspective.
Yeah, even worse, right? Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that, like you said, raising taxes is bad, lowering taxes is good. This is the Republican Party mantra. The margins tax, which is essentially the state's business tax for franchises, has been phased out. So there's another $8.5 billion hole that has to be filled. So again, there's a lot of moving parts here to this. So we'll see the degree to which they're willing to make some compromise here. Now, all it takes is a simple majority to break the cap. So they could spend more money if they wanted to. But no Republican is going to get reelected in a primary if they vote to increase the cap.
Yeah, the word to hear, the phrase you're going to hear a lot of is revenue neutral.
Yeah.
We're not increasing taxes. We're just shifting them over.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're a big state. We've got big problems, right? You've got 1,000 people moving every day to Texas. That affects transportation and mobility. You've got huge issues in public education, which we need to talk about next. You've got an aging population, which means healthcare is going to be on the agenda. And of course, the border, which the state has put $800 million behind in the past two sessions. So there's a bunch of big issues on the agenda. Let's talk first about public education, Jay. I know this issue is close to your area of interest. So what's going to happen with public education?
Well, I'd like to say that they're going to go in and solve it.
They're
going to
solve it. Excellent.
But they've literally said that every session. So the big problem, obviously, with public education are two things. And we've already seen some pre-filed bills on this. Right now, the system is designed so that the first pot of money that goes to fund education comes out of local tax dollars. So one of the bills that's been on pre-file, which is something that Bonin in the past has argued in favor of, is that the initial amount of money coming should come from the state, not local taxpayers. So you fund it, you set the education budget, it's initially filled, and then back by the state, then backfilled by local governments. The second part of it, of course, is the question I said earlier, is revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. Are you going to spend more money in education, or are you going to keep it like it is? If you don't spend more money, then you're, in some ways, you're kind of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to figure out if you're going to spend more money, and if you are, where are you going to get it from?
Yeah.
The third big piece on school finance is a question of the Robin Hood system itself, the recapture system. Large school districts like HISD, Austin ISD, and probably by next year Dallas ISD are all going to be in recapture, meaning they're essentially giving all their money to the state of Texas to fund other districts. That is an unsustainable system, and by all accounts, they recognize that. Less than 38% of revenue in education, or expenditure in education, rather, comes from the state. So all that needs to be dealt with. It all requires probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $3 billion addition. That doesn't account for new programs like Pre-K for All that Governor Abbott wants to do, where it's been price tagged at $1 billion a year. So you've got all these moving pieces associated with school finance. It makes it very, very hard.
Do you remember this happened last year where Governor Abbott penned an op-ed in the New Jersey Star Ledger that said that if New Jersey residents feel like they were being overtaxed, they should move to Texas? And then the New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy wrote an op-ed in the Chronicle that said, if you want a quality education, you should come to New Jersey. So I think we're seeing this fight play out in a way that Greg Abbott doesn't like, and probably is going to be a big push for at least some reform. Now, the reforms you're talking about are difficult to get through. The last time the ledge did this, it was like the entire session taken up by it. So I don't know if the political will is there. But like you say, there's a tremendous amount of a kind of Christmas wish list here for Greg Abbott, right? Yeah, he wants his pre-K, which was cut in 15, to be put back. He has talked about increasing teacher salaries. So there's a lot on the agenda. That's not even to say the needs in special education, right? Now, the Texas Education Agency, which we've talked about in prior podcasts, is asking for between $100 and $150 million to expand the initiatives for people who need specific services in special education. This is in reaction to the state essentially illegally setting a cap of an 8.5% benchmark, which was a lot higher than the national average of 13%. So it's not just sort of public education itself that's on it's the issue. It's also the sort of issues surrounding it.
Brandon, what other things you see out there that this session we ought to keep an eye on?
You know, it's a good question. There are a bunch of stuff. I suspect that although we won't have the kind of inflammatory issues that we did for the last session where the bathroom bill kind of dominated everything, I do think the religious liberty issue is going to be back on the agenda. So there were bills, for instance, that were introduced but weren't passed, allowed for individuals and businesses and other entities to refuse service to same-sex couples. Remember, the Supreme Court essentially allowed this to happen. Now, they had a ruling which was fairly narrow that allowed for a Colorado baker to not to produce a wedding cake for a same-sex couple because it violated their religious freedom issues. But we're seeing, I'm sure, a bunch of other issues that are going to come up, like religious protection for people who are state licensed professionals, university organizations and clubs. Mike Schofield, who probably is not coming back this next session, said that last session had a bill that protected freedom from homeowners displays. So if you wanted to put a giant cross in your yard, then no homeowner association could say that you couldn't. So this is, I think, going to be the bathroom bill issue that is going to dominate much of the wing of the session for people who are inclined that way.
Yeah, I think that we're also going to see a series of local preemption laws.
Yes.
And that's been a favorite of Governor Abbott's, and we've talked about this past. I like to call him the mayor of Texas. But Austin and San Antonio both put out wage limitation bills.
Yes.
Where they were guaranteeing leave That's going to be contested.
Yeah.
As you know, during the last special session, he had wanted to do limitations on things like the tree cutting ordinance or the plastic bag ordinance. And so you're going to see, I think, a more enhanced preemption and a greater control of local assets and local decision making is going to be centralized. The other thing to me, in addition to that, that probably you'll probably see more conversation around, I think, is we haven't completely dealt with the disaster mitigation issues here in Texas. So Harvey, we've had droughts in West Texas in the past. We have fires, tornadoes in North Texas. It's probably we've reached that point where a statewide FEMA-like entity is going to be calling the question here and whether or not we're going to have a permanent structure in place. We just don't have a nimble enough state government to deal with some of these continuing disasters.
Yeah.
And it would not surprise me if you see a permanent sort of ability for the governor to declare a disaster and have access to rainy day money to inject into for disaster mitigation.
Yeah. Hey, here's a great local control bill. Matt Krause from Fort Worth introduced a bill. This is a pre-filed bill that essentially does not allow a municipality or county to prohibit an individual who's under the age of 18 from selling lemonade or other non-alcoholic beverages from a stand.
That's
on
just
private
a mean
property.
Bill, isn't it? Is that not the meanest bill? I'm anti-lemonade stand.
It is, I think, totally, though, in line with your discussion about the local control issue. Here's another issue that I think is going to come up, and that's abortion. And of course, this has been an issue which has been perennial in Texas politics. But I think that we're going to see this pushed because you have a new Supreme Court, right? Bob Hall introduced legislation to have an amendment to guarantee the right to life of unborn children and prohibiting abortion, essentially saying we should undo Roe v. Wade. Will the court take this case? You know, we don't know, but we've seen a lot of litigation around Texas abortion issues.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think you're going to see an attempt to pass a bill that they know will sort of be contrary to existing Roe v. Wade law and essentially try to litigate it. And we know that we have an attorney general that will be more than happy to push that issue.
That's right. Hey, last thing, let's talk about gun control and gun safety issues, school safety issues, right? Because in the aftermath of Sutherland Springs, the governor assembled a group of individuals to talk about the issue. I think the Republicans, especially Abbott, are realizing that this is an issue that might be trouble for Republicans. And the governor clearly looks responsive on this issue. So is it the case you think that the governor can get buy-in on things like more active shooter training or an expansion of the school marshal program or mental health screening? This is obviously difficult territory for Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, I think the governor himself sort of pushed back or pulled back on initially being supportive of things like red flag laws.
Yeah.
I do think you might get enhanced funding for school marshals, and you may see some, I think, need for or expanding training. I'm just very dubious that you're going to see much of anything else other than that right now.
Yeah. Matt Krause filed legislation that allows essentially for federal gun laws to not be enforced if they're not also in the books of the state of Texas. So the issue is going to keep being pushed, right? I mean, exactly like the abortion issue, it's unlikely to go anywhere legislatively. But politically, of course, there's a legal fight ahead that could be of great interest. But this just, I think, summarizes perfectly how exciting and fun the legislative session is. And if we can't make it fun, right, Jay, who can, right?
That's true, Brandon. That is true. Well, that's it for this week. Party Politics is recorded in the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
Big thanks to our coordinating producer, Ernie Manous. Special kudos to our web and graphics team here at Houston Public Media. And finally, thanks especially to our audio engineer, Todd Holzlinger.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. Thanks for listening.